Welcome to the Golf Nuts Podcast with Jimmy James and Aaron Abrams. Today we have David Enderby, who is a caddy that has some wonderful stories that Jimmy met around his adventures with the Top 100. Specifically, if you read the blog post on Jimmy's blog about his experience at Arcadia Bluffs, you'll see a little bit about his introduction to David. I'm looking forward to meeting David today, although I've had the opportunity to chat with him a bit in preparation for the podcast today, and I can assure our listeners that he is a wonderful guy and has great insight to what it's like to be a caddy. What are you looking forward to today, Jimmy?
So, as you mentioned, David and I met at Arcadia Bluffs. I had caddies. I've had lots of caddies at different courses, and I found him to be one of the most – all caddies are interesting. And I found him to be one of the most interesting. So looking forward today to talking to him and hearing some of his stories and understanding what it's like to be a caddy. And so I think it'll be interesting talking to him. And he'll probably surprise us on a couple of things also.
Well, that's
sort of his nature, his a part of his personality. So just a fun guy to do a loop with.
Well, I can't wait to meet him through this podcast for our listeners to hear from him. So without further ado, let's jump into the interview.
So David, you and I met, and one of the things that I remember most was out of all of my 100 courses, and I had caddies on probably about 90 of them, the best line I had for my entire quest came when you were caddying for me. We were on that par 5 11th hole at Arcadia Bluff. The green slopes severely from right to left. And I hit my approach shot to just off the front of the green, the right side of the green. And the pin was about middle of the green. Do you remember what you told me?
I told you a whole bunch of things, but might have been the Willie Nelson.
That's it. And I said to you, what in the world is a Willie Nelson? And you told me you need to get as high as you can.
As high as possible.
As high as possible. So, yeah, I remembered that one for the entire time, and I think that was the best line.
I wish I could take credit for that one, but I got that from a buddy of mine that actually has had a resume as extensive as mine, all the way from Bandon Dunes to Martha's Vineyard and a whole bunch of stops in between. I met him at Oakland Hills.
And are there some other, what are some of the other lines caddies that caddies say to their golfers that you think are really great one-liners?
Well, I'm assuming that we're trying to keep this as like a family podcast.
Yes, we are.
One of those things. I just want to make, there's probably only a couple of them that we could probably
we haven't really thought about this, but I think it's like a PG-13 audience. So, you know, somewhere in between.
Well, you guys, I understand. The reason I got these, obviously, I got 90% of these sayings from the guys at Whistling Straits. And I believe, to my knowledge, the first one that I heard was either the Lance Armstrong, when the golfer says, "Hey, what's this putt going to do?" And you stand behind him, you go, "It's a Lance Armstrong." He says, "A Lance Armstrong." He goes, "Yep, one ball left." Okay, now I believe that was like the first one. Or the guys from St. Andrews, I heard, had when you're standing on a par 3 and you scull one and you hit it into the front edge and it hits the edge and it hops up onto the green, that's called a sister-in-law. And the guy says, "A sister-in-law," and you go, "Aye, laddie, you're up in there and you know you shouldn't be." Now, to my knowledge, those are the first two that ever came to be. Those are the first two that I ever heard at Whistling Straits. Let me put it to you that.
You know, so just again, well, Jimmy and I are not professional interviewers. So and we're so we're going to jump around a little bit here, but you know, sure. I one thing that I want to ask as sort of a follow-up to that is, you know, when I had the opportunity to play Whistling Straits, it seemed like it had an incredible caddy culture, and what from what you're saying there, it seems like, you know, you got some great lines and it's a funny group of people. In the caddy community, what is the, you know, what are the top three places that people want to work other than, you know, like Augusta or something like that? What are the top three places, and like, why are those places known as the best places?
Well, I'll share with you two things real quick here. And the first one is when people ask me, you know, give me your resume, you know, where you been? And I run down the resume, everything from being the PGA Tour in 1976, Craig Stadler's first caddy, rounds with Jack Nick, blah, 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 blah. And I go through my resume, and when I get to Whistling Straits, everybody goes, whoa, Whistling Straits? Really? Yeah, I was at Whistling Straits for a year. Now, the only thing I can share a bunch of things with you, but you got to remember something. When I was there in 2016, there were 220 caddies there. Every single day, a minimum of 180 caddies goes out on the grass at Whistling Straits and the Irish. Every single day from April till October. That's kind of like being in the Navy SEALs. Not really much money. The bags are way too heavy. The golf is really, really bad. You're not making much money, but it's Whistling Straits, Bo. You know what I mean?
Yep. Beautiful course. So when I played Whistling Straits in 2017, my caddy was a kid. His name was Joe, and he was number 123 the first time he caddied there. And then he came back later to caddy again in 2017, and he didn't get such a neat number, but he said he loved when he was Joe 123. And did you happen to meet Joe while you were there?
Yeah, I'm sure I did. There was a couple of Joes there, but that's funny you should mention that, because I think, I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, my number was 217.
Yeah, so all the caddies have a number that they go by.
Yeah, so I guarantee you there were a few behind me. So like I said, back then, and I'm telling you, it's even more crowded now.
So, David, you mentioned that you were a caddy for Craig Stadler. You were his first caddy. Yeah, so.
I caddied for Craig in his first professional tournament that he qualified for.
And what year was that? Do you remember?
It was August of 1976. It was the Sammy Davis Jr. Greater Hartford Open at Weathersfield Country Club in Weathersfield, Connecticut.
Quick aside, I grew up in Hartford, Connecticut.
No way.
Yeah.
That I can't believe it. You and I obviously crossed paths at least twice before, right?
Yeah, at least twice. Yeah, it's too funny.
that's the thing about golf that it's how small sort of the game is in that sense, and the people
how crazy it is.
And the people you meet and the people you run across. So when we were walking from, I think it was the third green to the fourth tee box there at Acadia Bluffs, you told me a story about where you were caddying for Bob Smith.
Yes.
And it was in, I think, the 1972 PGA Championship.
Correct.
That was played at Oakland Hills. You mentioned Oakland Hills earlier. That was played at Oakland Hills, right? So, share that story with us from when you were caddying for, you were, I think, a 16-year-old kid caddying for Bob Smith. Why don't you share the story and the famous person you met at that time?
Oh, you're talking about, okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, well, we drew names out of a big barrel, blah, 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 the caddies. And I got a guy by the name of Bob E. Smith, 1972. I didn't know him, but turns out he was a top 60 player on the PGA Tour, which in that time, that was huge. Anyway, I picked up his bag on Tuesday, blah, blah, blah. We go down to the range, and Arnold Palmer is there. So obviously, there's 10,000 people, you know, at the range watching Arnie hit balls. As we're walking to the far edge of the range, Arnie turns around and says to Bob, he goes, "Hey, Bob, how you doing?" And Barb turns around and goes, "Hey, Arn, what's going on?" And he keeps walking. He just like, what? I go, and I started freaking out. I go, oh, my goodness. I go, my guy knows Arnold Palmer. I couldn't believe that my guy knew Arnold Palmer. And as he's walking away, he goes, "Hey, Bob, you got a game today?" And Bob goes, "I'm not sure." And we go down to the edge of the range. I'm having a coronary. I go, "What do you mean you're not sure?" So finally, after about 20 minutes, he tells me, he goes, "Hey, run up there to the putting green and tell Arnie we'll play with them today." So after I picked myself off the ground, I ran up the hill. And of course, now Arnie's on the putting green and there's like 10,000 people standing around the putting green. And I walk up to him and he's hitting putts. And I walk up to him and he turns around, and he looks at me and he looks down at me. And I opened my mouth and nothing came out. I mean, nothing came out. And he started laughing. He says, "Oh, yeah." He goes, "You're Bob's caddy, aren't you?" And all I could do was like shook my head. And he goes, "Yeah, tell Bob we're on the tee in 5 minutes. So I ran down there and we played a practice round with Arnie at Oakland Hills in 1972.
So you got to meet, you had the opportunity to meet the king.
Yeah, I had to, an opportunity to meet the king. And I, as a matter of fact, when I was on the, when I caddied on the senior tour, I was on the champions tour in 1994, half a 93, half a 94. And I caddied for Bobby Smith again on the champions tour. And we played another practice round with Arnie on the champions tour somewhere down in Florida. But at the time there was, there couldn't have been more than maybe 100 people following us around.
I never saw Arnold Palmer in person, but just my sense from photographs is his forearms were like twice the size of a normal person. I mean, is that what it looks like in real life, that he was just completely jacked?
Yeah, but not so much that. It was just like you've heard people, you know, it's funny because I've been watching the Golf Channel, obviously, a lot since I've been quarantined at home here. And it wasn't so much that it wasn't so much as physique. It's like people say, you know, "Arnie, when I saw you in 1978 at the, you know, the BC Open, you looked right at me and smiled." And that was the thing about what he was like. You were, there was nobody else around but you when he was looking at you.
Interesting. You know, I have a question for you related to these old time golfers. I haven't had a ton of experience bumping shoulders with the with these old time golfers, but I did randomly have the experience where I had to play two or three holes once with Chichi Rodriguez.
Oh yeah, sure.
And he struck me as almost like a Jackie Mason, just a complete slapster, jokester, like genuinely a very funny guy. Did you ever meet him in your travels?
Yeah, it's funny you should mention that name. When I was at Le Gorse a couple of years ago down in Miami Beach, I mentioned to one of the golfers that I was caddying for back in 1976 when I was on the regular tour. We were at a place called the BC Open in Endicott, New York. Okay. Chichi Rodriguez's caddy, his son got ill. This is crazy. He was on the tour with his wife and his kid in like a little minivan, and his kid got sick and he had to go to the hospital. So all the caddies got together and donated blood for part of his payment. Of course, Chichi picked up the rest of it. I told that story to one of the members at Le Gorse. The member picked up his phone, hit a number on his phone, and 30 seconds later, I'm talking to Chichi. And we are talking about that story that I just told you. Crazy. And as a quick aside, have you ever seen Chichi Rodriguez do his trick shot show? Did you happen to see that when you're, he does a dozen things, but he tees up two balls with a six iron and hits a cut and a hook with bang, bang, and they meet 160 yards within an inch, 160 yards from the tee box.
Wow.
Oh, my God. I'm going to try to find that on YouTube.
Do that. Yes. I've seen it with my own eyes twice. With my own eyes, I've seen
it twice. That's amazing. Who are some of the other professional golfers you've caddied for or had experiences with during your caddying?
Well, the other one, obviously, that everybody likes to hear about was with Nicklaus, and that was in 1977. That was at the Jackie Gleason Inverary. That was in Fort Lauderdale at the Players Club where I stayed. I qualified on Monday morning with a guy by the name of Sam Farlow from Birmingham, Alabama. You know, 140 guys teeing it up on Monday morning for like 20 spots. Sam got one of the spots, shot like 72, 69. The wind blew really hard after we got off the course. This was before the internet, obviously. And we're looking at the leaderboard. He goes, "Hey, I think we're gonna have a good spot." I go, "You know what? It looks like we are. We definitely made the cut," which is all I cared about back then, which means, you know, I got an extra 2 days' pay. And he goes, "Hey, I'll call you. Where are you staying?" I said, "The Players Club." He goes, "I'll call you with our tee time." He called me that night and he says, "Hey, we got the last time of the day, 140. I go, "No kidding. Who are we with?" He goes, "Two guys you probably never heard of." I go, "Who we got?" He goes, "Guy by the name of J. Nicklaus and R. Floyd." Now, listen, when I tell this story at Arcadia Bluffs, a bunch of guys will stop me and they'll go, "David, I'm assuming that Sam didn't win that week." So I start laughing, obviously. And I wanted, you know what? Honest to God, guys, I don't know if we made it. If we made a check, I don't remember it. It was maybe $700. But we played with Jack Nicklaus and Ray Floyd Saturday afternoon, Jackie Gleason Inverary.
Yeah. So what were those guys like? And I'm going to lead the witness here a little bit. My sense is, just having grown up watching golf with my grandfather, sitting in his living room, watching those guys, and then just kind of some, maybe just from my, you know, golf nerd community that I'm part of, that those two guys, Jack and Ray, just are insanely competitive. I don't know what that actually translates to in terms of how nice they are to be with and things like that, but they seem like very much like when you're playing around with those guys, particularly in a tournament, they're not talking at all. They're not, you know, what is it like to actually be in the group with them?
You're exactly right. The funny thing about it is when you say competitive, their competitiveness never shows on the golf course, or I should say in a different way, coming from an ex-hockey player type thing. About Nicklaus was, it was like when you were with Nicklaus and you were out there like on the tee box with him, it was like every single thing in the universe was completely blocked out except the golf ball, the golf club, and the target. You know what I mean? It was like 10,000 people could have been, there were no cameras back then, but they could have been talking, or they're, you know, they used to wear real spikes on the cart path. They could have been walking and jostling for, didn't even register. No outside forces ever even registered at any type of body language or tone of voice or anything.
Is there complete silence? Do they talk at all? Is there any small talk? Hey, where did you have dinner last night?
Yeah. There were a couple times, like I said, being the last group on Saturday afternoon. I think I just remember one specific time we were on a par three, and I think somebody needed a ruling in front of us. So we literally just, three caddies and three golfers. So there were six of us. And we were just basically sitting on the bags, and the three golfers and the three caddies were basically just sitting there, you know, BSing, you know, telling stories that, you know, they said where they would, you know, Ray was building a house or, you know, something like that. They would fall into it. I mean, just for for probably 6 or 7 minutes when they realized that they had to. You know what I mean? They had to get their mind off golf. They had to kind of like decompress for that 8 or 9 minutes while we weren't doing anything.
You know, this sort of that stimulates another question. I've always had this question because with the way we watch golf on TV, you can't really gauge what the pace of play is during a PGA Tour event. You know, we're all used to a certain pace of play. You know, in a normal recreational round at a private course. And it's, you know, there's not a lot of waiting. You kind of just keep moving forward throughout your whole round. How does that differ from a PGA Tour event? Obviously, they're not hitting as many errant shots as me and Jimmy, but do they move? Does it feel like the same kind of pace as a normal round, or does it feel slower?
Like a glacier.
Slow.
It's the most insanely slow thing that you can ever imagine in your whole life.
So what is a round from first tee to 18th green timing wise?
That's a good question. I got to believe it's over four, but less than five. You get to the U.S. Open, from what I understand, in the U.S. Open, although I never caddied in a U.S. Open, it's got to be over 5 hours.
Wow. So yeah, that's that. What are some other differences, David? Between caddying for a professional golfer on the tour and caddying for recreational golfers like Aaron and me?
Well, let's put it this way. Instead of telling you the differences, there are no similarities. I promise you. Listen, this just to go off track for a minute, I was reading an article in Sports Illustrated. The author used to be a quarterback in high school. And he was probably, he went to a junior college for 1 year, and then that was it. Then he's a writer, blah, blah, blah. One day he's interviewing Philip Rivers. This was probably 15, 16 years ago. And he and Philip are out throwing the ball back and forth. And his arm starts to get loose, and he starts to feel good, and he starts throwing a nice tight spiral in there. And Philip started throwing a nice tight spiral. And in 60 seconds, the author immediately realized, there are no similarities between them and us. There are no similarities. None. Just standing next to them. And I told you that story about the kid that I took. Well, I took five kids. I went to, I didn't tell Aaron this. I was at the web.com. I was at the web.com Q school in 2015. I went to the pre-qualifying in Lincoln, Nebraska, two first stages, two second stages, and the championship stage. I went 0-for-6. It cost me $1,200. Okay? I caddied for the guys that could not make it on the web.com tour. There is no similarity between them and us.
Right, right.
Totally different. Totally
there's
different game.
There's nothing.
Have you?
There's not.
Have you done? Have you caddied professionally for any professional women's tour versus men's tour, or just only men's?
I never have.
Okay.
I never have. I was on the Champions Tour. A good friend of mine, who I went to high school with, his wife played on the LPGA for I think 15, 16 years. Her name was Cindy Fig Currier. And at the time when I was on the Champions Tour, kind of, again, Monday morning qualifying, her husband, Pat, called me. They were down in Austin, Texas, and wanted me to meet Cindy and another gal out at the Dinah Shore out in Arizona or California. It had been Palm Desert. And I was on my way out there, and my son was conceived. That was it.
That was it.
That was the end of the Champions and the LPGA.
Got it. Jimmy, can I ask, and I apologize to the listeners here because this is a proof positive of me not being a professional interviewer, but I just want to go back to the question I asked 4 or 5 questions ago because I feel like we didn't get through it. But I had asked, you know, tell me, my perception was that Whistling Straits was a great place to work as a caddy. It sounds like from your answer that it wasn't. But what are the great places to work as a caddy?
Well, you know what? The great places are in the summertime, most of them are in New York on Long Island.
Is that just because of the paycheck? Because of the
exactly.
tips? Okay.
That's probably one of the big ones. Piping Rock, we actually have phenomenal playing privileges there. Piping Rock, we're Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday after 4, which is really good. I don't know as though any of the other, but as you know, anybody who's been out in that neck of the woods, everything out there. I mean, if you go out to the Hamptons, you know, and you start at National and Sabonic and Maidstone and,
Friar's Head,
Shinny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you just work your way west from there. And then there's, I mean, Bethpage, there, you know, what's the other one right next to me?
The Creek.
Yes. Well, there's the Creek and there's a really good one, the Augusta of the North.
Oh,
Jewish Club.
Yeah, it's I played in a tournament there. It's yes, something green.
They held one of the
They had the Northern Trust there. I'm just blanking on the name.
Phenomenal place.
Yeah,
like I said, it's the Augusta of the North.
Yeah, it's beautifully maintained.
I mean, and then I have friends over at Westchester. I have friends at what's it called? Not Old Sandwich, the other one. Meadow or something in Westchester, not too far from Westchester Country Club. Those are all really good places too.
And what is the curious, like what the 2020 or maybe we'll go to 2019 because it's 2020 or too early in the golf season. But what is the 2019 standard tip for a caddy for a normal round at one of those sort of, you know, tri-state northeastern, you know, fancy country clubs? What is the standard?
You're never going to make less than $100 a bag. Never.
Okay. But what would you say the median tip is? Just curious. Like what is it? 110, 120?
Probably be 220
per bag.
I'm sorry. 120 per bag.
120 per bag. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So which is interesting. And people always wonder about this. What's the appropriate amount? What's the appropriate amount to pay, and there are pluses and minuses on both ends, because I had a golfer tell me that he brought some guests to a course and that guest tipped the caddy like $500. And he had told him, cause he knew this guy was a big spender, and he told him sort of not to do that because that embarrasses the members. But, The range of tips. I use caddies on probably walking caddies, probably on maybe 90 out of the 100 courses when I did the top 100. And the tips, I never tipped below 100. But the range was on the Long Island courses. It was the most. It was like 150 to 200.
Right.
And so you always want to give sort of customary for average service. And if it's above average, you want to show them that, and you want to make sure you're showing them. How can a golfer actually, without having to ask the caddy what's customary, know what a good amount is to tip a caddy? What the right amount is?
Let me share two things with you. Okay.
Okay.
First and foremost, there's nothing that drives a caddy just out of his mind more than a grown man telling another grown man how much money to spend and what to do with his money.
Right.
In other words, we're walking off the 18th fairway. You've been grinding on this guy for 17 holes. You basically carried him for the last 6. And he reaches into his pocket, and there's the Benjamins. And he's got 2 of them already just ready to just itching, burning a hole in his pocket. And the guy reaches over, he goes, "Oh, no, 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 Bob. Oh, no." Now, really? That's number one. The other thing is that you have to work. Don't ask the guys in the pro shop. That's another thing. There might be a kid or I shouldn't say a kid. There might be somebody in the pro shop that is maybe a little envious of the fact that he's stuck in that air-conditioned shop all day, and he looks like Casper the Friendly Ghost, and I'm out on the grass, you know, a minimum of 6, 8, 10, 12 hours a day. So there might be a little animosity there. So the only time you can get in trouble, or I shouldn't say trouble, the only time where it gets kind of sticky is when you have like a company that I work for, like CME or CSI, that you pay X number of dollars in the pro shop and X number of dollars goes to the caddy and X number of dollars goes to the company. That's the case at Whistling Straits. That's the case at Pebble Beach. I know that because that's the company I work for. I work for CME. They have the contract at Whistling Straits and they also have the contract at LaGorse and Augusta and Pebble Beach. And not to get off the beaten track here, but Jimmy and I have discussed it. Jimmy, I assume you read those articles that I sent to you? Okay. So, you know, with all that information that's going on now and the thing that I told you about National and the lawsuit at National out on Long Island and blah, blah, blah. Country clubs right now are jumping on board of CME and CSI, which is not, I'll bet you if you took a poll of the caddies, I would be willing to bet you that most of them are not real crazy.
Yeah, the thing we're talking about.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah,
the thing we're talking about here is there's the gig economy. And governments around the country are trying to protect workers in the gig economy on who's an employee and who's a contractor. And caddies are sort of caught up in that because caddies work as contractors at most places as opposed to being an employee of the club. And so there are lawsuits and things going on around whether caddies are employees and entitled to benefits or whether they are contractors. So that's what David and I are talking about. And that's one of those unintended consequences of this trying to work through the gig economy and ensure fairness to workers.
But specifically, go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah. Let's keep talking about the gig economy topic if we're going to stay there. But if not, I have another question sort of about compensation and caddies.
Go ahead.
So, you had said, you know, in the Northeast, you know, the Hamptons courses and so forth, where the standard tip is and that there's a desire to kind of work at those type of courses. But what about in the rest of the country? What about, you know, if you're playing in the Midwest or something like that, is it, you know, it must be different because everyone wants to be out in New York. Caddying is the standard tip more like $100 instead of $120 or how does it break out in those other courses like Acadia Bluffs?
Arcadia Bluffs, you're on your own. Arcadia Bluffs is not really, that's not a good, that's not really, they've only got a handful of caddies there, believe it or not. And there can't be more than, when I was there and even now, there can't be more than a dozen caddies there at most.
Oh, okay.
Of the 100 rounds that go off there, maybe a handful will take caddies at Arcadia Bluffs. I was going to say, I have a friend that works at Medina. Medina's a pretty good example. Midwest Club, Chicago. And he's telling me that they have a couple hundred caddies at Medina, at least. And from what I understand, they're making a minimum of $120 a bag, minimum. I had a good friend that worked out at Oakmont, and one of the assistant greenskeepers at LaGorse spent some time at Oakmont. And he told me that the guys at Oakmont are getting like a minimum of $100, $120 a bag.
It's interesting because that's the onion I'm trying to unfurl here. Unpeeling it a bit is that to me, it feels like as someone who travels extensively and has played all over the place, it doesn't feel very regional in what we're paying, for caddies. So, you know, it's always in that, you know, 100 to 150 range kind of thing. And it doesn't, it wouldn't matter to me if I'm playing, you know, in Michigan, Texas, Kansas, or New York. But maybe there isn't such a disparity.
No, I see what on the we're talking average now. Yes, on the average, that's what we're talking. You get out to, like I said, the Hamptons to Atlantic, Deepdale's not in the Hamptons, but they're right outside. You go to Deepdale, Atlantic, Sabonic,
Friar's Head, I bet.
I don't know anybody at Friar's Head, but yes, I would throw that into the group too. Where if you're, I mean, you come off the, I've heard guys walking off the easily $400 every time.
$200 a bag.
Yeah, $200 a bag or $100 a putter.
Right.
If they're taking a cart. I mean,
yep.
I mean, I know more than a couple of guys at Atlantic that are doing that.
What are on the opposite end of the spectrum? What are the? I'm curious if you could. What are the stories you've heard of the lowest tip anyone's gotten in the last couple of years, and also the highest tip?
Well, I think I hold the record for the lowest tip. There was a lady at Le Gorse. She's about 70 years old. She shakes like Don Knotts. And every time she tells you that she's got the yips and you want to give her a tip, all she wants to do is argue with you. So one day I'm carrying a bag. Her name was Mrs. Robert. I'm carrying her bag and this other lady is in the cart. So I'm carrying her putter. And it was one of those days where I just didn't feel like schmoozing her. All I wanted to do was do my job. And anyway, she ended up giving me $10 for carrying her putter and went into the head pro and complained about me.
so that is probably the record. I was thinking you may not have the record because a caddy at my club here in Atlanta, Cherokee Town and Country, was telling me about caddying for a billionaire. I won't mention the billionaire's name, but the billionaire lives here in Atlanta. And this, it's not Ted Turner, but it's another billionaire here in Atlanta. He caddied for this billionaire and some of his friends. And at the end of the round, he said this billionaire gave him $20.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
What about on the higher end? I've heard anecdotally a number of times, Bloomberg, you know, hey, if you ask a caddy what the biggest tip you ever got was, they'll say, oh, I caddied for Bloomberg once and he gave me $1,200 or he gave me it's some big number.
I never heard that. No, I have a friend of mine who's at Deepdale. And I have, like I said, a couple of friends at Atlantic. To my knowledge, I think maybe anywhere between 400 and 800. I had a member, this freaked me out. When I was at Le Gorse a couple of years ago, a buddy of mine called me on the phone. He goes, hey, are you working tomorrow? I said, no, I got the day off. He goes, would you go in and cover a loop for me? I said, yeah, sure. Anyway, I went into the caddy master. I go, hey, I'm here for so-and-so. He goes, yeah, well, just grab a seat. I didn't know that he didn't like people doing that. Anyway, he calls my name about 1:30. I caddied for this gentleman from Sabonic, he and his son. At the end of the round, he and his son played 18 holes. He slipped me what I knew were some crisp Benjamins. I mean, when people hand you money 7 days a week, 48 weeks out of the year, as soon as you put it in your hand, you know exactly, I got a couple of Benjamins and a couple of Jets. You know exactly what's there just by how many hands it's been through. So I thought to myself, wow. But I'm like a kid on Christmas. I never count it till I get home, right? So I put it in. I go, there's at least two or three Benjamins in there. And then he said, before he left, he goes, hey, we're playing tomorrow. Would you like to? I said, I'd love to, sir. So I get home and I had five $100 bills. That's the best I ever got. The next day,
wow.
The next day, I had him, and he had an emergency phone call on the ninth tee, and he handed me 300 for nine holes, and then him and his son took off.
Wow, that's
great. That's what I said.
Well, I would say just I'm gonna inject one thing, and then Jimmy, I'll shut up. But I do think these courses like a Sabonic, where everyone knows that initiation is hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not $1 million. So if you're a member of one of those places, you are sort of self-selecting into having to tip pretty well, because everyone knows that if you're a member of Sabonic, you can debate whether they paid $500,000 or they paid $1 million, but they paid something more than a house to get in there.
Yeah. A question that I wondered about, because when I played at Augusta, I heard that the caddies actually watch their golfers on the range and then they bet on them. Do the caddies at the clubs you play, do the caddies bet on their golfers?
No. I'm trying to think of where I've been. No, we don't. Every once in a while, maybe once a year, from what I understand, now going back to the 70s, and that gypsy thing when I was on the tour, at that time, back in the 70s, that was when all the great caddies were black. That was when Golf Ball was working for Ray Floyd and Killer Foy was working for Hale Irwin, things of that nature. And those guys would bet on everything. Those guys would bet on how many birds were going to be on the telephone wire between the third and the fourth tee. That was just crazy. They bet. And one of the guys who took me under his wing, I think I told you this, he's no longer with us, was Willie Peterson.
Yeah, you told me about Willie Peterson, and you told me you caddied for Calvin Pete, which during a time when it was usual to see black caddies on the bags of white golfers, but there were very few black golfers, and there were no white caddies for black golfers.
No, and I didn't see what happened was, Jimmy and Aaron, when I first got on the tour, okay, when I was like, I was just showing up on Monday morning looking for a bag, okay? But the first ride I ever got was from the Canadian Open in Essex to Massachusetts, Pleasant Valley Open, okay? Caddy for Woody Blackburn. But I got a ride from Calvin Pete's caddy, okay? So I got to know his caddy, and then I got to know Calvin. Then when his caddy quit, I got the bag, okay? It just so happens that we were in South Carolina. We were at the one, what's the one with the tower in the back there, the lighthouse?
Harbor Town.
So we're in Harbor Town. It's 1976, and I'm caddying for Calvin Pete. Now, remember, I'm only 20 years old. I have no – you know the saying, I'm really young and I'm really dumb.
Yeah.
Okay? 20 years old. All I know, Calvin and I spent a couple of nights together drinking some beers at the bar. He needed a caddy, and I'm carrying his bag. Well, I'm there for Monday and the practice round and Tuesday. By Wednesday, we're all sitting around the practice green, and we're all sitting on the back of the bag, and I'm getting like some sideways glances from like some old dudes, guys that, like I said, Ray Floyd's caddy, Jack Nicklaus's caddy, Hale Irwin's caddy. You know what I mean? These guys this is what they've done, since the backwoods in North Carolina. Finally, I said, whoa, I asked what, like Willie Peterson, who caddied for Jack at Augusta. Okay. I said, yo, what's going on here? Everybody's looking at me funny. And he says, man, don't you know? I go, no. I go, what's going on? What did I do? He goes, well, you're caddying for Calvin. I go, yeah, I'm caddying for Calvin. I go, who else am I going to caddy for? He goes, well, Calvin's black. I said, oh, I didn't know that. You know what I mean? I didn't know Calvin was black.
Yeah.
All I knew was Calvin could play. And Jimmy, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Who cares? Can you play? All right, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, so some interesting experiences. It's been great talking to you, David. I want to share with our listeners how you helped me during my playing my 100 courses. At the end of our round, you asked me if I had someone to host me at Oakland Hill. And I told you there was someone working on it. And you said, well, you've taken care of me today. I want to take care of you. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to have someone from Oakland Hills call you this evening and arrange for you to play the course. You don't have to worry about whoever else was helping you. This guy will take care of you, which was quite nice of you. And later that evening, I got a call from Leo Savoy. Leo was the president of the club when they had the Ryder Cup there. And it turns out that you and Leo grew up together, caddied as were busboys and caddies at Oakland Hills as kids. And Leo went on to become the president there of the club. And, true to your word, Leo said, my buddy David told me to take care of you. And anytime David asked me to do anything, I'm right there for him. And he said, you, tell me when you want to play. Bring two of your friends, and I'll host the three of you. And it was a fantastic day. So thank you for handling that for me. And I can't wait to get back to Oakland Hills because they're redoing the North Course. They're redoing the South Course, the Correct. Championship course. So it'll Correct. Be great to play it and play in and play Inverness, which has also been not Inverness. In Toledo.
No, Inverness.
Yeah, Inverness. Inverness.
Yeah, yeah. In Toledo. Toledo. Yeah.
In Toledo.
Yeah.
And so play those again. They're and compare the two again. But thank
I would like
yeah,
to
Yeah, we could do
you,
that.
Jimmy. I'm signing up right
let's,
now.
Let's plan on doing that. We'll play one day and the other the next. And we'll do a comparison of those two courses now that they've both been redone. So thank you very much, David, for taking the time. It's been a pleasure reconnecting with you and hearing the stories and giving us a better understanding of what it's like to caddy, both on the professional tour and for recreational golf.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy. Aaron, nice meeting you.
You too. And let's play some golf together on the same side of the bag together. Let's
that would
play
be
some
great.
Golf together.
I don't
be
spend great. Too much time in Michigan anymore, but if I'm in, absolutely.
You know, if you're going to be in the Long Island area this summer, I live in Westchester, so we can definitely play some golf together. I'll reach out to you separately.
Obviously, you know, you got to get out to Piping Rock. Bring Jimmy out to Piping Rock. How about that for a task for you this summer? At the end of the summer.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one quick aside. I know that we said we were done, but I love Piping. I love Piping Rock. And I think it's one of these courses that suffers because of all the great courses in the neighborhood and people don't know how great it is. And I think there's a limit. If they really did the top 100 based on the merits, then Piping and the Creek and others would be in it. But they can't because otherwise there would be no, you know, Oakland Hills and Detroit might
not
be in it.
I don't know what it's like for the ones around it. But I don't know if you're aware of it, but just like up until 2 years ago, Piping Rock didn't even allow Raiders on the course.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting. Like one of the great courses of my experience was the Chicago yes. Golf Club. And then, right. And then, CB McDonald. And then I finally got to do Piping. And I actually think Piping might be better than Chicago Golf Club, actually. Those are a bit of fighting words, but it was interesting to see the two together. And Chicago is in the top 10 and Piping's
right.
not in those lists.
Just because
I didn't know that there wasn't. Anyway,
of
it's a great course.
I think that's all.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So that's an awesome course. All right. Anyway,
it's been
this
great.
Is awesome.
It's been
Thanks
great.
You guys.
You.
Keep in touch.
Thank you.
See ya.
Okay. Bye.
What a fun discussion and chat there with David. Full of stories, very interesting and fun guy to talk to. and just listening to some of his stories and all the people that he's met along, that he's caddied for on the professional tour, and just getting a better understanding of what it's like to caddy for guys like you and me, and caddy for those guys. And his perspective on it is there's no comparison whatsoever. Those guys are nothing like us, not even close.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that was really fun too. Really enjoyed it. And one of the things I think just in life beyond golf that I'm fascinated by are people like David who, and you have this too, Jimmy, who create very fast friendships. I've never met the guy, and I left that feeling like I was his friend. How does that happen? How does that happen? That's a magical thing that someone like David could do that draws you in. And obviously, you know, he's a people person. He gravitated to a career with people, spending long times with people. And what a nice thing for him that he found this thing that makes him happy and has traveled the world doing this and has had all these adventures while also paying his bills. It's a really, really, really fun thing. I'll say one other thing just like that I thought was interesting is I've never this whole discussion about what to pay a caddy. It's always stressful.
Yes.
I have the same thing when I go into restaurants and something. I mean, I like that there's a convention in restaurants that you pay 20%. And so there may be different opinions on the tip. You know, do you pay it on the full number or do you pull back the tax out of it or whatever? But around the edges, most people I know pay about 20% on tip. And you just kind of know that rule of thumb. And that rule of thumb, even for all the golf I've played, it's so confusing what you pay the caddy. It really is. And then never mind what you pay the locker room attendant and all these other things. So it's always been very confusing to me. So I was happy to hear that I've been in the right zone. That $100 to $120 range that he said feels like what I generally want to do. Sometimes I feel pushed to go higher, but I actually, frankly, always feel a little uncomfortable when I'm doing that, but I just do it because I don't want to be socially awkward. But it's interesting. So I was happy to hear that.
Yeah, my range too is about 100 to 120. But as we talked about with David, it's usually more when I'm out on Long Island. And you want to make sure when you've had a great round and your caddy has, you know, gotten you out of trouble, given you some great reads on putts, and you made a few birdies, you want to show that you really appreciated that. And you want to make sure that's where the pressure comes in for me, is I want this guy to know that I really appreciated the job he did for me today and enjoyed being out there with him. And you give him a tip, and you're hoping that there's a smile.
Yeah.
And if there's a frown, it's like, okay, but there's a lot of pressure because of that. So it was great. Learned a lot from that discussion with him.
Yeah. I hope our listeners enjoyed it. I certainly did. It was really fun. I'm really glad we did that.
It was great. All right. So until next time, Aaron, where we talk to people that you and I have both met and done what you talked about in terms of just friendships that almost happen instantly. And, you know, I've been debating in my mind, is it that something special about golf that makes that happen? Because it happens a lot in golf. Or is it that golf attracts the type of people that can establish instant friendships? So that's a question, and maybe we'll find a time to talk to maybe a psychologist or someone, a golf psychologist or someone on that topic on a future episode.
Sounds good. All right. I'll talk to you soon, Jimmy.
All right. Bye.
Until the next time.